Thanks, John. Welcome back to Saturday with Brian Dowling. I'm joined here now by Alex White, Minister for Communications, Energy and Natural Resources, Mary Lou MacDonald, the Sinn Féin Deputy Leader, newly elected TD and anti-austerity campaigner Paul Murphy, former Minister Alan Dukes, and barrister and political analyst Noel Whelan. You can also join the conversation. You can text us at 51551. Our email address is saturday@rte.ie, or you can tweet at SaturdayRTE. Before moving on to the issues around water and the budget, I want to just deal first of all with some issues arising from the series of interviews by Maria Cahill, a great grandniece of Joe Cahill, the veteran IRA leader, who alleged that she was raped by an IRA leader back in the 70s, and particularly her description of a sequence of nightly interrogations lasting over almost 6 months by an IRA team who were apparently investigating what happened. If I can come to you, Mary Lou MacDonald, first. Do you believe her account of those nightly interrogations where she says she was picked up and brought to a house in Anderstown repeatedly over almost 6 months? Do you believe her account of those interrogations?
Well, in fact, Maria says that her abuse occurred between the years of 1997 and 1998. So it's much more recent than you have alluded to there, Brian.
But the interrogations were subsequent to that.
I believe that Maria was abused. I absolutely believe that. I think she has set out her story, and to me, it's a very credible story in terms of the abuse. I know from talking to people who know Maria and who knew Maria, I didn't, that she was extremely traumatised, extremely troubled, and there was a reason for that. I accept that she was abused. I don't accept the assertions that she has made in respect of a Sinn Féin cover-up. The women that she went to within our party are honourable, independent people. Each of them are absolutely vehement that they gave good, sound advice in respect of reporting, in respect of counselling. One of them has come out publicly to say that out loud. They're absolutely crystal clear on that. I don't accept her assertion that Sinn Féin has information on a cover-up of child abuse. That's a most serious allegation. It is completely wrong. She also asserts that we refuse to cooperate with the police in respect of children who now might be at risk. That is absolutely wrong. And finally, if, as Maria Cahill says, she has information of abuse in the past, of cover-up in the past, but maybe more or as importantly, danger to children and minors in the here and now, I want to say to her to go without delay to the appropriate authority, be it the PSNI and social services in the northern jurisdiction or an Garda Síochána and the HSE in the southern jurisdiction. Anybody who commits an offence of abuse, who covers up the abuse of a minor, is committing an offence. They have to face the full rigours of the law, and all of us. And in this case, Maria, if she has that information, I would appeal to her to go directly to the authorities, not to hesitate, not to waste another day, but to go and make that report directly. You asked me about the interrogations. Your listeners may or may not be aware that there was an investigation into the two aspects of Maria's story. On the one hand, her allegation of rape, and on the other hand, the allegation of involvement of named individuals in what you have called
an IRA team of investigators, as she described them.
Your listeners may or may not know that in both cases, no convictions were found. I do know that Maria Cahill now has an appeal in with the policing ombudsman in the north, which is absolutely her entitlement, and we have to let that process proceed. But no convictions were held in any of this. And I need to also say this, that I've spoken to one of the named individuals who was part of this kangaroo court. She tells a very, very different story, and she contends that, in fact, she was very supportive to Maria Cahill.
What was the purpose of their meeting with her?
Well, let me just finish this bit and then I'll come to that. She has, in fact, correspondence from Maria Cahill up until, I think, 2008. Commending her for being supportive and so on. Now, the only point I'm making is that assertion by Maria that this was interrogation and oppressive is hotly contested and absolutely disputed by the people that she names.
And are those people going to come public? Are they going to come into the public domain and say that her account of being brought on a nightly basis to a house in Andersonstown where she was subject to repeated questioning over a 6-month period, are they going to come into the public domain and put their hands up and say, we dispute that version? Because Gerry Adams has disputed her version of his conversations with her.
Yeah,
are they going to come into the public domain?
We'll stick with it. I don't know, and I can't answer for them.
Should they come into the public domain?
I think the more clarity we have on these matters, the better. And I'm just shackled here by the fact that there have been legal proceedings, there is an ombudsman's inquiry. I don't know
because
if
that
has
an issue. There is an issue, Mary Lou McDonald, yeah, where in the past, members of the Sinn Féin leadership have made a point that they have gone to people in the IRA in respect of trying to locate and identify the bodies of people mm-hmm. who are disappeared, people who are murdered by the IRA, and have made a much play of that. So is there any reason why anybody else in the leadership of Sinn Féin, yourself, Gerry Adams or anyone else, cannot go to people who may have been in IRA positions in this period and ask them, you said you've already spoke to one, and ask them to come forward and give their public account of this?
Well, listen to me. First of all, we don't make a huge play in respect of going to people in terms
well,
of
no,
returning
I'm
the bodies.
Well, no, I make the point that Gerry Adams has said repeatedly
yes,
that the
well,
Sinn Féin leadership
well,
have made repeated efforts to help to
but
identify
Brian,
the bodies
Brian,
of the disappeared.
Well, of course. Well, of course you do whatever you can to assist in that process. What else would you do? And just to say to you, each of the named people that Maria alleges was involved in it. As I say, they contest this matter. They cooperated with the police investigation. They gave statements to that process. They're absolutely adamant in their position. And they were not convicted of that. So I think it's important to say that.
So but I presume that then there should be no impediment of them coming forward
well, and,
publicly.
And that will be a call for themselves. I also want to say this because I know Maria was... She initially wished to meet me. I made contact with her. She's now decided that she doesn't want to meet with anyone from Sinn Féin. So that's entirely her prerogative. She made great play of comments that I made in respect of the Roman Catholic Church on the back of the Dublin
and
Diocese.
And I know you have made
so
the point
on.
That you apply the same
well,
standard.
Yeah, and I just want to be very clear with this, just so there's no misunderstanding or no lack of clarity, that the position is that irrespective of who you are, irrespective of whether you're in any group or no group, whatever part of society you come from, if you have committed an offence, a sexual offence against a child or anybody else, if you are involved in the cover-up of that, you face the full rigours of the law. That's the standard. That's the position. And I want to repeat again, because I deeply resent and I understand the trauma of a victim, and I'm very attuned to that. But I actually resent a slur against myself, perhaps against the Sinn Féin party, that we are involved in collusion and cover. And actually, I was quite surprised that the national broadcaster allowed such an allegation to be made on the airs. It is entirely untrue.
Maria Cahill makes a point that the IRA people, including some women who interrogated her, as she puts it, over 6 months, that at the end of that process, they brought her into this house and they effectively forced her to confront the person who she says raped her. That has to be nothing less than an absolutely appalling experience to put someone through.
They
that is her account of that.
Yes, and they contest that account. But let me say this.
But do they contest whether it happened or whether it was as she described it? That's an important distinction, Mary Lou.
Can I answer Brian's question?
No, but because you're not answering it. Because the question is, do they accept these meetings happened or are they disputing how she is characterising them? That's an important distinction. Do they accept they put her in a room with the person she says abused her?
What I do know is that there has been an acceptance, I think, by two of them that yes, they met with Maria, but they absolutely dispute the fact that it happened in the manner or for the purpose that she describes, Noel. And let me repeat again.
There's one other issue I want to raise with Maria in relation to this. And it's this. Maria Cahill also says that she's not alone, that there are other women who have contacted her and said that they suffered similar abuse or rapes at the hands of IRA members and that they are out there as well. Are you any way uncomfortable or are other people in the party, in the leadership, uncomfortable with those claims? that there might be some truth in that.
I'm deeply troubled by those claims. And as Maria makes those claims, and I said it earlier on, if Maria has that information, she needs to bring it forward. By the way, if anybody else is in that position or has that information, they need to come forward. The issue around abuse, and we know one in four across our society are affected by it. There's no section of society, no section of any part of society that's immune from this scourge. And the key to dealing with it is that people have to tell. They have to come forward. So if Maria Cahill has that information, if anybody else has that information, I would appeal to them to come forward and to report it to the appropriate authority. And just to finish out your point around what did or didn't happen in terms of what Maria says, if it were a thing that for anybody, the IRA conducted an investigation into a matter of sexual abuse, that is clearly wrong.
But it's more than wrong, isn't it? It would be absolutely clearly horrific.
No,
it would be appalling.
It's
not just wrong. It would be appalling.
It's reprehensible. It is entirely wrong. It is entirely inappropriate. It is absolutely not the way to deal with complaints and offences of this nature.
But presumably, people in the leadership of Sinn Féin can talk to, I know you say they vehemently dispute that. Is there not a case for the people in the leadership of Sinn Féin then to ask those people and to ask them to come up to the plate and to come out publicly and say, this is our account of what happened?
And they may well do that. But that would be a call for themselves. It wouldn't be, I would have no authority to tell them to do that, but they're
Mary Lou is in a position of leadership, not just in her party, but actually also on this issue. And that is to her credit, because Mary Lou MacDonald was one of the most prominent people in relation to the cover-ups that were exposed in the Catholic Church. And I admired her for that and supported. And indeed, many people in other parties were just as strong as she was. But she's to be admired for that. Now, she has to take a leadership position in this regard in Sinn Féin. And even with regard, if I may say so, to her party leader, Deputy Adams. She has already, I think in fairness to her again, conducted some kind of partial investigation in the last few days within Sinn Féin as to what happened in the past. She needs to go further. She needs to ensure that people who say they have a different view or a different experience or a different account come out and give that account. Now, I didn't see the Spotlight programme, but I did see the RTÉ News last night. And I saw a brave, honest, compelling woman give her account on the television. By the way, as she was perfectly entitled to do, and as RTÉ were perfectly entitled to facilitate, because I don't agree with the suggestion that they ought not, that RTÉ oughtn't have done that. Of course they should. But the point is this, you can't say you believe Maria Cahill's account about what happened to her, and then say you don't believe her account as to what she says in relation to the cover-up. So, you know, you can't be selective in that regard. The fact is she has made the most serious allegations about Mr. Adams. I'm prepared to accept Mary Lou's good faith. Bona fide is that she doesn't know, she can't
say. But Gerry Adams,
she wasn't
Adams
in the room.
Absolutely disputes her version of that conversation.
Yes, he does. And, you know, Mr. Adams has been selective in terms of how he has recalled other matters in the past as well. Let's be clear on that.
But he's Mary adamant Lou, that yes, he is not sure. That account.
I know. Well, he may well be adamant, but that's not the fact that he's adamant is not the end of the matter. You know, this has to be resolved. And I would say to Mary Lou, in good faith, and I know her and hope she takes this in good faith from me as a political opponent, she has a good record on this. She needs to put that record into play now internally with regard to Sinn Féin and the wider Republican movement, as we're told, in relation to how they dealt with this issue in the past.
Yeah, we have to apply,
Alan Jukes.
I think we have to apply absolutely the same standards to this as we far too belatedly applied to abuse by people in the Roman Catholic Church. And I still think that it would be very, very useful to have the answer to Noel's question. Did it or did it not happen that Maria was confronted by her rapist in this weird internal procedure that went on in the IRA at the time?
Mary Lou?
Well, I just want to emphasise two things. I wasn't questioning, Alex, the RTÉ's right to broadcast Maria's interview, and much less Maria's absolute entitlement to tell her story. But I am saying to you that in the course of that discussion, an allegation was made in respect of Sinn Féin that we're sitting on information and covering up child abuse. That is not true. And I think at a minimum, a public service broadcaster or any broadcaster should have at least queried, questioned or probed that assertion. It is entirely wrong. In terms of the processes or what happened with the IRA and how they managed things in the past, the honest truth is I'm not in a position to say. That's the honest truth.
But you're still in contact. Why can't they come forward and give us the information?
Well, Alan,
in just the same way as that we insisted that people within the Roman Catholic Church should come forward and answer questions.
No, Whelan. There's been a pattern in recent years in baseball teams and football teams in America, in gangland, for example, in the church, in swimming originally, that the priority becomes almost instinctively to defend the organisation when the organisation is accused of not adequately investigating or covering something. You're the vice president of Sinn Féin.
I am.
You're the equivalent of the auxiliary bishop of a diocese or the vice chairman of a sports organisation or the vice chairman of a club like that. You don't, it's not a question, you have responsibilities here. And the first basic responsibility is to establish what facts can be agreed on. Can the fact of these meetings taking place in this house or upstairs in this flat that she described in detail be agreed on? Did they happen as events? Was there a night when she was required to sit for a couple of hours, as she described, and be re-traumatised by having to face the man she says her abused her? Did that happen? And is the suggestion merely that she somehow is recharacterising them or misremembering them as opposed to factual events? Here's the gaping hole in the situation you advanced this morning, Mary Louise. I watched the Spotlight programme. I watched the Vincent Brown interview. I listened back to Richard Crowley's interview with her yesterday. And I can't decide whether she was abused or not. I can't decide whether she abused him. I can only decide what view I take as to her credibility. And like you, I found her to be extraordinarily incredible, extraordinarily credible in her description of the events. And I've sat in many courts and taken many witnesses through the type of abuse she described. But she was equally as credible. She was equally as credible when she came to describe these nights she was brought to a house and cross-examined by heavies in IRA, frankly, heavies in the IRA, about what was the truth of what she was saying. And she was very credible when she described the trauma of being exposed to her abuser, or alleged abuser, for 2 hours. And there was no conviction in respect of the abuse upon her. Yet you would accept her credibility on that, and here on national radio are prepared effectively to call him an abuser. You accept her credibility on that, but you change your mind when she comes to make allegations that touch on your current responsibilities. And I say you do that out of instinct.
As a matter of fact, I don't, because I think it's entirely wrong for any institution to pull down the shutters in the way that you describe. And you say that I have responsibilities, and you're absolutely right, Noel. And one of the responsibilities I have is to make it absolutely crystal clear, as a matter of fact, that Sinn Féin is not in possession of information as regards child abuse. Sinn Féin is not sitting on that information. And Sinn Féin is most certainly not refusing to cooperate with any Garda investigation. Those are the assertions that were made on the 6-1 News. And I am putting the record straight on that.
If I might, Mary Lou, just for a second, I just want to read two comments. We have one from Maria Cahill, who says, as you mentioned earlier on, that she is not going to meet with Sinn Féin, that she sent an email yesterday evening. We also have another one which says, if any other politician was linked with two stories of covering up abuse, it would be career ending. Why does Gerry Adams get to play by different rules? Why do Sinn Féin members simply follow without question? That's from Orla. Mary Lou.
Gerry doesn't get to play by different rules. The same rules apply to everybody. And one of those rules is around being accountable, answering questions, explaining yourself, doing the right thing. Another one of those rules is that you don't simply yield to the wishes of what are essentially political opponents who, let's face it, don't want Gerry to be in the position that he's in, despite the fact
but there is an issue
that
in that,
he's elected
in that Sinn Féin wants
membership.
To be in government, and Sinn Féin could very well be in government. So that standard of accountability is going to be
irrespective of that, we need to come in there.
Yeah. The concerns that are being expressed here and the wishes that are being expressed here have nothing to do with politics. They have to do with the case that's being revealed of somebody who was abused, who has gone through trauma, and allegations that there are other cases where a shadowy organisation carried out its own internal investigation into this, and the appearance of the case is that the people who are abused and traumatised are being denied justice. That's what we're talking about, not politics.
No, but Alan, on the issue of justice, let me just refer to you again that this specific case, there was a police investigation. There was a court case, so don't imagine that, albeit belatedly, that process didn't kick in. And the second thing I would say to you is that a number of the people who cooperated with that investigation, who made depositions in respect of it, say categorically that they advised Maria to tell, to go to the authorities, to seek counselling. One woman who did come out publicly, Jennifer McCann, stated categorically that she had spoken to her, she had been asked, Maria at this stage as an adult, that she wished it to remain a private matter. Jennifer is a most sympathetic and decent woman, advised her at a minimum to go for counselling, organised that counselling. I'm simply illustrating to you that the facts are that people tried to be supportive and gave the right advice. And can I also say this? Whatever about what did or didn't happen in the course of an investigation, interrogation, whatever you call it, Maria has acknowledged that her granduncle, Joe Cahill, an IRA man, if ever there was one, said to her to go to the RUC. Maria would not go. Now, I understand that in part, but you can't have two parallel tracks, so that there was a cover up, and yet you were being asked
can I encourage your listeners, Brian, to watch the documentary. I watched it up on YouTube last night, because the characterization Mary Lou presenting of it is very partial. Joe Cahill did the decent thing finally when he was told, and he didn't know at the time that she was being interrogated by an IRA investigation every night. Finally, when he told her, he was grandfather first and IRA man second, he said, go and report to the police. The others who didn't have the same connection with her effectively re-traumatised her within the organisation. I can understand why, if you give your life and passion for an organisation and a cause, whether it's as a Catholic, as a strong Catholic, whether it's for a sporting organisation or whether, in this case, it's the Republican movement in the general sense merely. I can understand why it must be traumatic to have to consider the possibility even, because you passionately are opposed to children's abuse or to any cover-up of it. It must be traumatic to give, even to accept the responsibility that it might be possible. And therefore, there's an onus on you as a vice leader
to go
and explore it.
Apart from being a strong Republican, as it happens, I'm also a strong Catholic. That as it happens.
Yeah.
And for me, there is no choice. There is, and it's quite wrong for you to suggest that I am somehow shackled by some misguided or even deeply felt sense of loyalty to any organisation. My standard and my position is that abuse must be reported, it must be dealt with, it must be acted upon. And the bottom line is this. We say, or Alan asserts, that there might be other cases. There might be, Alan. You're quite correct. Those that assert that they know about these other cases need to come forward to the appropriate authorities with those cases. I think that's a reasonable starting point if we are to assure justice and the vindication of people's rights.
I just wanted, Paul Murphy, do you have a view on this?
Yeah, I think sexual abuse is rife in all aspects of society. And so the idea that sexual abuse happened within the IRA, it clearly did happen, as it happened in other organisations, be it the RUC, be it the UVF or whatever. Is it likely that the IRA had internal procedures for dealing with complaints, etc., in the context of a battle against the British state and a suspicion of the British state? I would say it's likely. The reality is we don't know what happened here. Victims generally tell the truth. We don't know the details of what happened. We don't know what happened in terms of an investigation. And I think that's the point, is that she should have been at the time clearly advised to go to the authorities, because any internal procedures are not capable of dealing with sexual abuse in any private organisation. And now I think probably what we need is for people who were involved to come out. The reason I'm hesitant on this issue is just because I do think these issues arise, and it is the case that political opponents use them to have a go. And it's just very, very important that we approach this from the point of view of the interests of the victim and the interests of other victims of sexual abuse.
It's also important to ensure that there isn't a chilling factor that just because you're a political opponent that you decide not to raise an issue because you're a political opponent. That would be wrong also.
I remember the days after Mary Rafferty's groundbreaking documentaries, many prominent Catholic leaders said, well, that's just anti-church voices.
Right. Which was not
This is not just anti-Sinn Féin voices. This is internal Sinn Féin voices and external Sinn Féin voices.
Story like this comes into the public view, of course people are unsettled, are worried, are concerned about it. It would be entirely abnormal if people weren't. And I think where we need to get the balance on this is, on the one hand, to acknowledge Maria, as I have done. I have no difficulty doing that. It's unfortunate that I don't get a chance to do that to her face to face. But I acknowledge that.
And would you appeal to her, just as a matter of just on that, would you appeal to her to reconsider meeting with you directly?
Well, I'm not going to do that if the woman has made her mind up. But I would say that I'm open
but
still.
But you're ready to meet her.
I'm open still to meeting her. So, on the one hand. But on the other hand, there has to be an understanding that where a process and where there has a process has been gone through and an investigation has been gone through, it's wrong then to say that named individuals did things that they didn't do. So advice was given to Maria and it was given by Joe. And of course, Joe no doubt loved Maria as his family member. But Joe was approached by Jerry once it became clear that the trauma was as a result of a rape allegation. The men had a conversation. Joe was the appropriate person to go and speak to the woman. He did that. Maria acknowledges that. And then Jerry, correctly in my view, took himself out of the equation, because no more than it's appropriate for a private organisation to investigate these matters, it would not have been appropriate for Gerry Adams to be in the middle of...
Mary Lou, I just want to bring one comment to your attention. Maria Cahill has just tweeted, there are recordings which exist in relation to those IRA meetings in those flats. I don't know whether you have any knowledge of that. If there are such recordings, if that is accurate, should they be brought into the public
domain? Well, I have absolutely no idea about that, and... But I can't answer.
I know that
had
just come in, and
I have no idea. Maria might explain that in some greater length. The other thing is this, maybe just to finish,
if you don't mind,
I know. Thank you for your forbearance. One of the other points that was made, and as you know, Jerry absolutely refutes the commentary that has been attributed to him in the course of a meeting that he had with Maria. She also said that she met with him intermittently up until the year 2006. And I've spoken to Jerry on these issues. He met with her, but not in any kind of formalised diaries sense, on one occasion. And then he would have run into her at the Failia. Belfast's not a huge city, so you run into people and, hello, how are you? That's not a meeting, but it is a conversation. In 2006... Maria parted company with us politically, which she was entitled to do. So I can only assume that perhaps that's the reason why she describes that as an ending of contact, because there wasn't those. In 2006 also, Siobhan O'Hanlon, who was a friend of mine, died. And so I'm just.
And Siobhan O'Hanlon was a cousin of Maria Cahill,
and a cousin
who
of Maria
introduced,
Cahill.
Who brought her to see Gerry Adams and subsequent to Joe Cahill.
That's right.
Okay. On that note, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be looking at all the fallout from the budget and water charges. Stay with us. We're still joined by our panel here: Noel Whelan, Alan Dukes, Mary Lou MacDonald, Paul Murphy, and Alex White. Now, Alex White, on Thursday on Leaders' Questions, your colleague and party leader, the Taoiseach, Joan Burton, talking about water and Irish water and the charges, said Irish water will deliver a cheap and efficient price to consumers. Mm. Before Irish water charge for one drop of water, the government is already effectively providing a subsidy, I think of the order of €100 million, between the €100 household packet, between the tax credit of €100. Surely that says, whatever else this is, it's not cheap.
Well, I think it's not cheap generally to provide a proper, clean, reliable water service and infrastructure in any state. And I think we're starting from scratch. Well, not starting from scratch, but we're starting with a new organisation in order to do that. And, you know, there's been a huge, I suppose, amount of frustration and irritation and, I suppose, anger as well in some quarters of people having to pay a charge, a new charge that they feel they didn't have to pay in the past. But I think that we're right to do it this way. I wouldn't, you know, I saw Liz O'Donnell writing in the paper this morning saying something of the something along the lines that, you know, there should have been a longer lead-in period. There was more debate, more public discourse about the need for water conservation. People might have bought into it more easily.
That didn't happen. But the charge to people,
Alex. It didn't happen too quickly. It happened perhaps too quickly.
The tarnisher said it will be cheap.
278.
It can't be cheap if the government from the off has to subsidise it. Yeah. Politically, you've had to make a decision to subsidise water by €100 million. That's what it comes down to.
We have to subsidise by even more than that, because don't forget
in terms of the customers, consumers, the people who are going to consume the water, they are from the off. You have to provide a €100 household package to cover their water charges, a €100 tax credit to cover their water charges, and that is because it has become politically difficult for the government, because the price people will have to pay is just not acceptable.
Yes,
to them.
The average price of 278 is, you know, was regarded by a lot of people, I think, as a big ask and a big demand. And what the government has done in the budget is taken measures to mitigate that and to reduce that 278. Effectively, we'll say to 178 when you offset the 100. That comes in at about €3.50 a week. Now, you can debate whether that's cheap or whether it's otherwise, but I think that in order to have a reliable water service in this state into the future, we have to do it properly and we have to do it in the way that we proposed. Could we have done it differently? Could it have been introduced in a way that it was explained and discussed and debated more? I think so. A lot of the stuff, particularly in the last week or two, huge confusion, you know, in relation to letters, you know, insensitive
and
language
and
letters
some of the issues
and so
around
on.
The
These
from
things
Irish
we could have done
with
that.
As well,
we could have well,
that.
We could have well done without.
This to you, Alex. The projected income, as I understand it, for Irish Water in its first year is of the order of €300 million. Mm. If you take away from that the subsidies being given for the government from the government, and if you assume that there's even 100% compliance, the net revenues coming in might be of the magnitude of €200 million. Is it worth all the political trouble that this is causing for that?
I think it is worth it. I think it is worth it for us as a state and as a community to have a proper water system in place. Don't forget, we're also putting in something like €500 million. The state is. It's not, you know, the water service won't just be funded by the water charges. It'll also have to be funded by a very substantial state input. It can't be any higher than the €500 million or so that it is because of European rules. I believe we have to get serious about providing a proper water service. It's a utility. And I think that most people will accept in the end that it's right that we have a payment system, the sort of payment system we put in place. It needs to be done in a way that people, I mean, what they say about taxes is, one of the things about taxes is it should be easy to pay. And this tax is not that easy to pay at the moment. And there's a lot of confusion, a lot of irritation that has to be sorted.
And we'll deal with that in a second. Mary McDonald, but isn't that a point that Alex White makes, that at the end of the day you have to get a pool of money to invest in the infrastructure? It's not going to happen on its own.
The minister talks about making this easy to pay. This is not going to be easy to pay for countless families. This will be, Minister, impossible to pay, because people don't have it. You may minimise it and say, well, €278, €178, what's the odds? When you're talking to families that don't have €178, therein lies your problem. You say €350 a week is what it would represent. In the glorious giveaway budget that we just saw that heralded the end to austerity, according to yourselves, a single person on the average industrial wage will be €3.30 better off. I mean, that's the scale of the giveaway budget, Maria. So you're giving it, if you're lucky, on the one hand and taking it away with the other. But for many, many families, they actually weren't given a whole lot. And they have told you last weekend, Paul was at the rally. I was at the rally. Thousands of people were at the rally telling you it's not a case of arguing the toss with your own communication strategies or anything else. They are telling you they cannot pay. And therein lies the worry for people when they can't pay. What happens next, Minister?
I want to come to Paul Murphy. You've actually built a political platform on opposition to water charges. But at the end of the day, surely there's more to it than that. People in every other European country, people pay for water.
There is more to it than that. Water charges has become a lightning rod for people of anger against 6 years of austerity and a sentiment of people that enough is enough. They can't take
it
anymore. And particularly in the context of all the talk of recovery, we're at a turning point, and Saturday's protest
but
is a turning point.
Are you just not simply jumping on a bandwagon of public anger against water charges?
Not at all. We have always opposed and organised the massive campaign of non-payment that defeated the water charges in the 1990s. Because
the water charges in the 1990s were not defeated. The water charges in the 1990s, forgive me for saying it, Alex, the water charges in the 1990s had got to the point where where they were actually working. Waterford was the last county that stood out, and they came in. And for some unaccountable reason, which I have never been able to understand, the Labour Party in 1996 decided they had to be done away with. And I remember it very clearly. It was the first cabinet meeting I attended after going back into government in November in 1996, the Rainbow Coalition, when at the insistence of the Labour Party, a system that had then been working perfectly well was abolished.
But the reason it was abolished.
They were not beaten by public opinion.
There was a political decision by the cabinet to do away with it.
But why do political parties make decisions? They make decisions because they come under massive pressure from below and because a massive campaign of non-payment was built and defeated the charges. That's what happened. To come back to this figure of 278 euros is a fallacy. It's a fallacy propagated by the government and the Irish Water. There is a cap on water charges for 9 months, within which, over a yearly period, a two adults household would pay 278. Once the cap is gone, the bill is going to be significantly higher. The government and Irish Water has deliberately underestimated how much water people use.
For example, you're shaking your head.
I'm shaking my head because the regulator, we have this whole process is regulated by an independent regulator. And I know that Paul has to, in order to continue his campaign, he has to actually, he has to persuade people that this is going to get worse in future years. I don't believe that. I saw some of your literature.
Just on that issue, Alex.
It's not so.
Is the 100 euro tax credit then and the 100 euro in the household package, are they here to stay?
Well, I mean, nobody can talk about budgetary measures into the future. I mean, what we've done is if you're saying about the future pricing, the intention would be obviously to try to assist people. I mean, Mary Lou was right. Of course, there are people that for whom any new charge will be a genuine difficulty. And what we've done on the budget is we've sought to mitigate that. And I think we've done a reasonable job in relation to that by having effectively 100 euro whatever way you slice and dice, 100 euro pretty much for everybody. There's a group that we have to address in the finance bill, and that offsets the 278. But for Paul to it's a megaphone campaign against water charges, but the fact is, what we'd want to do is bed this down as a utility charge, not to have to pay Mary Lou McDonald.
Minister, you talk about mitigating the charge. Yeah. I've been out and about in my own constituency in Cabra.
Indeed have I.
In the north inner
in
city.
But in mine.
Oh, good. Yes. In Cabra, in the north inner city. So I don't know what you're hearing on the ground, but let me tell you what I'm hearing on the ground. We do not have it. Please make that clear to them. They're looking at the doll and they see some of us trying to get this message into your heads of where it's at for families. And sometimes you get smart responses. Most times, in fact, you get no response. But you never have a sense that you have just grasped that you cannot take 178 euro or 278 euro from somebody who does not have it.
Yeah, could we go back just a wee bit? I think it was a tragedy that we abolished the water charges that we had in 1996. If we had continued with that system, we would have been a good deal ahead of where we are now. But let's go back. Since 1996, the cost of providing fresh water and wastewater services to the Irish public has been completely hidden. People thought, and I've heard campaigners saying it, we've already paid for it in our taxes. We haven't. We haven't paid in our taxes for public services. We haven't paid for public services in our taxes for years because we have been overspending. Two-thirds of the current government debt is a money we haven't paid for public services back over the years that we've given ourselves.
I want to bring in Noel.
Now comes to the point where we have to try to put a proper water system in place. Now, I would be the first to argue that it hasn't been done particularly well by the government. The communication about this was very bad, and having this kind of mix and gathering of a system that we now have with charges and tax reliefs and all the rest, it's a glorious mess and it should have been done much better. And I hope that we're going to work out of it. But there is no way out of the fact that as a society, we have to pay for the water that we use and for the water that we dispose of. And to have a campaign that says we don't need to have these charges is utterly unreal and totally misleading the public.
Just on those two points, Alan Duke's point, that it has become a glorious mess for the government and that the campaigns against it are utterly realistic in any event.
Well, let's be clear. Paul and other campaigners have been both consistent and absolute about this situation from the beginning. They're opposed to the concept of water charges. I don't believe the majority of the Irish population are opposed to the concept of water charge. I think if structured properly, if they could get quality water to their door and disposal, of their sewage from their door, people would pay a reasonable charge for it. It is a great pity it wasn't sustained as a charge from 1995 on. It's a bigger pity that all of this investment and restructuring and setting it up as a public utility wasn't done during the boom times when there were resources to do it. So, but as of now, when people say, well, fix it first and then we'll pay for it, the answer is, well, what shall we fix it? Because we can't borrow the money to fix it and we don't have the money to fix it and then to charge for it. So I think you have to separate the ideological opponents will never be persuaded that it is that environmentally and otherwise it is a good thing to charge people for water and the disposal of water on a usage basis. But the second point is that they are using, and they've been given the opportunity to use, the incompetence with which it has been rolled out and the timing at which it has been rolled out and the fact that it's been rolled out as the worst possible time politically and for ordinary households, because just when they felt they were getting a bit of breathing space, they're getting a bill for 200 or 300 that they don't have to pay. And what I can't understand is why there wasn't closer political management of every single aspect of this project. It required internet facilities and skills as good as the Revenue Commissioner. It required door-to-door engagement with households to the extent that the census do. So well, and it required the marketing skills of kind of ESAT and others to do it. And none of that. It just doesn't have the capacity to do the job right, Irish Water, or its political management at the moment.
Just on, before I bring in Paul Murphy, just on that very issue about Irish Water, Alex White, members of your own party met with the management of Irish Water, I think a week or so ago. One of your own colleagues, Ciara Conway, said it was hugely frustrating trying to deal with Irish Water. Many other TDs, not just the opposition TDs, government TDs, including some ministers, have all said that dealing with Irish Water is extremely difficult. What is the government going to do about the way Irish Water is going about its business?
I accept that it has been difficult. They're building up a new customer database from scratch. You know, they're doing this in a short period of weeks, which is not the way it ought to have been done. I agree with Noel. I mean, the government has to take, you know, has to
but
take
this is the government's creation.
I agree. And I think mistakes were made politically across the board in relation to how this was done and how quickly it was sought to do this.
Should this have been phased in over a longer period?
It would have been much preferable if it had been done, as Noel rightly says, during the so-called boom time, at least when we had money or thought, you know.
But we are where we are now. The Labour government now. Should it have been phased in by this government over a longer period?
If it had been done in a much more efficient way and in a way that people could actually understand and buy into much better. Yeah, but we are here now and we have to do it and we will deal with it.
There's something that we should say for our Water. I have some sympathy for a group of people, a company that have been plunged into this in a rather ill-considered way by the government. They're dealing, on the one hand, with a huge problem of actually installing water meters. You know, we've heard a lot of talk about the demonstrations. That is a huge problem for them to deal with, and they weren't equipped to deal with it. At the same time, they're trying to have to deal with a communication issue where people need information. And you know, they're suffering from the fact that for years and years, not only have we lacked proper water services, we've lacked proper identification services. I mean, cases are rife around the place.
I want to go to Paul Murphy for a second.
Where they think they're putting a water meter outside my house is where my neighbour's water comes in.
Paul, could you just answer this question?
Very quickly.
Workers who are involved in installing water meters are being intimidated. What does he say to that?
That question, Paul Murphy, but also this question. You're opposed to water charges. Mm-hmm. You're opposed to the property tax. Mm-hmm. The Anti-Austerity Alliance wants to abolish third-level fees, mm-hmm. along with a whole load of other charges. What should people pay for? Should they pay for anything?
We should pay for things through progressive central taxation.
And deal with the intimidation question as well.
I've been involved in peaceful, effective protests that have stopped water metering. All the protests that I'm aware of are of that character. I want to
there are other incidents, and people know of other incidents where there has been difficulties.
What I know of is cases of effective Garda occupation of entire areas on the north side of the city, whereby people, peaceful protesters, are being manhandled by
Garda. You just have to say that if workers are being intimidated, it's wrong. That's all you have to say.
I have no problem saying that if workers are being intimidated, but I believe that there's a slur being put about protesters for a purpose. But I want to nail the idea that in order for us to have investment in water infrastructure, to nail the idea that we need water charges to have investment in water infrastructure, we do not. It's a political choice not to invest. And this government and the previous government, they have no credibility on the issue of water conservation. I mean,
large portion of all the homes in this state were built in the last 15, 20 years. They chose not to impose regulations for grey water harvesting.
Paul, the economic platform that the anti-austerity alliance is putting forward, as I just said, involves scrapping a whole range of charges, and instead you talk about introducing a whole range of millionaires' taxes to come in, financial taxes to come in. Effectively, I think in your document, Real Jobs, it says there should be an end to the reliance on the private sector for job creation. Oh. And we should create 150,000 jobs. If you're not having charges for across a whole range of things, where's all this money coming from?
People should read the Real Jobs document, and it outlines precisely where the money could come from.
It lists a whole range of charges. Many people who believe that if you attempted to impose them, the people involved would be gone.
Number one, we should refuse to pay the bondholders, right? This year or next year, we have a primary surplus in this state. The state takes in more. So what Alan is saying is wrong. We'll take 3 billion in more in tax revenue than it spends on public services. And yet we'll have a deficit of 5 billion.
We have to pay the interest on the money that we borrowed in previous years to provide public services. Taxation was not sufficient.
We should refuse to pay the debt.
Two-thirds of the current government debt is for money that we didn't collect in previous years to pay for public services that we used in this country. That's two-thirds of the public debt.
Mary Lou MacDonald.
I want to actually return to Clare Hall and this issue of intimidating protesters, because I've had a lot of communication, particularly from Clare Hall, in respect of the opposition there. And many, many of these opponents who are being accused of intimidatory tactics are pensioners. They're people who get up at the crack of dawn and do their stint before they go to work. I have spoken to a whole lot of them, particularly from that community, and I think it reflects a sense across communities. They really resent being painted up as some kind of class of gurrier or intimidators. They're not. They're people who have a very decided position. We're going to take a very quick break,
and we'll come back and we'll continue this discussion after that.
No, I was simply making the point. I repeat the point I made earlier, that there is intimidation, that that workers are being attacked going about their work, going about their job, workers have been spat at, that workers have been kicked. I never mentioned Clare Hall, by the way. It was only Mary Lou that mentioned it. I have no accusation to make against people in Clare Hall. I don't know what happened
in
Clare Hall.
But I do know
that there's an application before the courts that's being dealt with at the moment. I do know from my own information and from what I think every TD and senator knows in Leinster House, that there is intimidation going on. And all we have, I mean, all Mary Lou and Paul has to say is that's wrong, that workers, ordinary workers...
OK, let's bring in Paul Murphy. Paul Murphy, then Mary Lou.
Look, but don't be attacking the workers who are doing their job.
Paul Murphy.
I'm opposed to any intimidation of workers, but I'm also not aware of any incidents of intimidation against workers. And if I was aware, if you show me evidence, well, then I'll say I'm opposed to that. Right? But this comes from a decision by Irish Water.
Are you saying that you've heard of no incidents whatsoever at all?
Correct. I've heard of peaceful, effective protests, and I've heard of them being intimidated by the Gardaí, and certainly words being exchanged with workers, because that happens in such a circumstance. But Irish Water is responsible for placing workers in a situation where they're imposing meters on people who don't want meters.
Is words being exchanged not a euphemism for people shouting abuse?
No, because I've been at these protests where words have been exchanged, whereby the workers say, and I've exchanged words, I don't mean necessarily bad words, etc., okay, but saying that
Mary
you shouldn't have done these.
We've all exchanged words. My point is this: whatever, clearly, if workers in the course of carrying out their work are being intimidated, that's absolutely reprehensible, and I think we all agree with that. My beef is this: is that this is being put across as though all of the protesters, the pensioners, the people who are up early before they go to bed, the families in their own communities coming out and taking a stand are some kind of...
I know if it was 100,000 or 80,000 people on the streets, they have every right to march. I've been on marches myself. I encourage people. It's part of the democratic process to march and to protest.
Is this issue of water charges just simply going to bedevil the government?
It's going to bedevil the political system generally, for at least the next year, 18 months. And it has, I think Paul is right, it has become totemic, Pat Rabbit described it as, it's become the iconic issue.
The lightning rod conductor.
But separate from any of that, there can never be a justification for workers, some of whom live in all of your constituencies who have to go home to their own families at night and pay their own water charges being abused by anybody in housing estates or otherwise. But the argument isn't that it's the ordinary residents of the housing estates who are abusing them. The argument, as I understand it, made in the High Court is along the lines that there are organised groups going around causing trouble at some of these protests, and nobody's in favour of that.
Well, the essential point
okay,
to make,
the very the quickly, the last word to Alex, Alan Jukes, but very quickly.
Without the resources being provided, and they can come only from the general public, we will not get a water
okay.
system
on
fit
that
for purpose.
Note, on that note, I want to thank the panel, Alex White, Mary Lou MacDonald, Paul Murphy, Noel Whelan and Alan Jukes. Thank you for listening. Join us again next Saturday at 1 o'clock. In the meantime, from all the team, enjoy the rest of your weekend.